And who was that again?
That was Traffic.
Traffic with?
Empty Pages.
Empty Pages from Ear Buddies and a recent show about...
Books.
Books. Books. About books. Yeah, I work in a library, a big library system at Harvard. I'm into books. Here's a big secret for the public. Harvard is hoarding a huge collection of millions of volumes of books. The biggest university library collection in the world, short of the Library of Congress. And yet it is closed to the public. So get out the pitchforks and march tomorrow, because we want that open to everybody. Take care. You can pay an enormous fee to get limited access for a short time. And some researchers are able to do that. Many are not. And that's a shame. And not everything is digital. And also, if you are using digital a lot, you'll notice the paywalls and so on, the subscriptions and all that you need. So, yeah, capitalism manages to commodify everything. And that is will lead us into our next show here at WMFO. Socialist Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. Although we might start changing that a little bit and say just socialist perspective, because democratic socialist is a term being bandied about a lot on the corporate media now. And we're going to talk about that today. If you live in the U.S., you know what we're going to talk about, right? We're going to talk about the elections. Everyone's kind of forced into that by the corporate media, but we're not going to try to be completely diverted by the elections. They are important. Socialists, good Marxists will engage in electoral politics as much as possible, even in a rigged system of some would call capitalist democracy or bourgeois democracy, and not the democracy of the people, or not socialist democracy or democratic socialism in any sense. Just meaning, you know, money rules. Big corporations manage to, through super PACs or whatever, get their way despite fair election laws. In Europe, for example, there's all sorts of public funding and election laws, and yet big business manages to fund and promote candidates that are for its interests, and including far-right candidates. And so the system is rigged. Doesn't mean that we don't fight to... not unrig it, but fight for a better system through using aspects of the system. And I'm not talking about what Sanders is doing using the Democratic Party. That's a non-starter, in my opinion, and in the opinion of others as well. It just doesn't work that way. We'll talk about why that is. Positives and negatives in the Sanders campaign. And I think the negatives outweigh the positives, and that's probably a minority assessment at this point, because Americans are taught to like a winner. You want to be on the winning team no matter what. And I used to be a real jock. I used to be really into sports, and I know that whole mentality hugely. I'm still into sports. I think there's a way to play sports without having a cutthroat competitive attitude above learning how to play well and learning the game and so on, or whatever the sport is. But with Sanders polling well now, really double digits, huge lead in the count so far in Nevada in the Democratic Party primary here in the United States. And by the way, I say here in the United States, we do have listeners via computer from other places internationally. You can see the sort of dominoes falling on the left. If I don't know if that's the right analogy, but so-called socialist or Marxist groups getting behind a Democratic Party candidate, Sanders, usually more than Sanders. That's the little thing that people don't realize. Oh, it's just Sanders. We're going to make a special category for Sanders, and he's not going to be really in the Democratic Party, and he's not going to be really a Democratic Party candidate. So supporting him is okay. False. He is part of the Democratic Party, and even when he registered himself as an independent at times, which he isn't right now, he's registered as a Democrat, he will block with, will work with, will promote the goals and organization of the Democratic Party. And that's a capitalist political party, no matter how you want to dance around that. And if you think that Sanders and other so-called progressives, and they are progressives compared to the Democratic Party mainstream, are they able to reform that party, change that party, hollow out that party, fill it with socialists? And the answer is no. And the answer is no because of the way it's structured, the way the Democratic Party is structured, by the DNC on down. It's a corporation within a larger electoral machine. That's the best definition of the reality, the material reality of the Democratic Party that you can come up with. And also there's a sort of, as Marxists would say, a dialectic, as we would say, a dialectic, that if you are working within a capitalist party to promote a capitalist party, to, you know, endorse other capitalist party politicians from the Democratic Party, this will have an effect on your ideology. So you look at Sanders, for example. You could say that, by the way, this is WMFO in Medford, WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Forum, commercial free community-based radio at 91.5 FM over the airwaves. Go to WMFO.org to check us out by the internets, interweb, computer. So lots of ways to listen, and we're here with lots of programming. And again, this is, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Socialist Radio, talking music from a working class socialist perspective. We've been on air here a long time. We used to be known as Socialist Alternative Radio. We've changed our name a little bit, trying to get it changed officially in the schedule. Haven't managed that yet. And one of the reasons we changed our name is that we are taking what we consider a socialist Marxist position on the elections, that this other group known as Socialist Alternative, which could have been confused with the radio show, they are taking a position of supporting Democrats, including Sanders and other Democrats, and then still call themselves socialist. And it doesn't work that way in reality, because if you support the Democratic Party, you support their candidates and their positions. And the funny thing is that with the Democratic Party in the United States, for any listeners from overseas, you're not talking about a membership political party. You can't say I'm a member of the Democratic Party. The best you can say is, if you believe in it, is you're registered to vote as a Democrat. Then you don't even have to vote as a Democrat. You can vote as anything. The Republicans and Democrats are not membership political parties. They are electoral machines, again, run by a hierarchy, an elitist hierarchy inside, usually of ex office holders or current office holders. But also some rich people thrown in with tons of influence and of course, the whole capitalist corporate agenda really at its foundation that stems from, in the case of the Democratic Party, stems from a party that represented slave owners. It was a slave owners party when it first started. It morphed into, as time went on and slavery was defeated in the Civil War and capitalism was brought into full force right after the Civil War and became the party still of the slave or the ex-slave owners in terms of the South, with the Jim Crow apartheid, you know, terror against black people, against African Americans, and that they had a sort of lock on that from when the time of the fall of what they call Reconstruction, soon after the Civil War, up until the victories of the Civil Rights Movement. You could say into the 70s, really. Maybe even some of them hung on into the 80s. Some of those old school apartheid, you know, Jim Crow Democrats operating within the party, and there's still some kicking around that supported that stuff, and that is really horrible that you would ever want to vote for a party like that or run as a candidate in a party like that. But it didn't stop there. They became the party of capitalism, and that would include things like Woodrow Wilson, vicious racist, got into the big colonial fight for colonial power of World War One, the bloody World War One, the party that that tacked over to Keynesianism under Roosevelt and others, but that included a lot of resting on the support up until a certain point, resting on the support totally during the Roosevelt administration of the Jim Crow Southern racist Democrats. The machine, Tammany Hall, so-called machine party Democrats in the cities. It's always been a corrupt party of capitalism, a party, before that was a party of the slave owners, then it was a mix, and now it's, and it was a party of Jim Crow, and all the northern liberals from FDR, even through Kennedy, and even through, you could say, again, into the 70s, rested on the power base of the Democrats in the South, in the Jim Crow, apartheid regime there. And that's conveniently overlooked by just about everybody I read. You know, there's a few or anyone that speaks of history. They look back. They've whitewashed the FDR administration, and there's a good book to read called "Labor's Giant Step" by Art Pries, and it's about the rise of the CIO. But in the beginning, the very sort of initial roots of the CIO, or the ground that fertilized it, the author, this book was written in the 60s, goes into what the Roosevelt administration was really like in terms of, not just in terms of what I've already mentioned. In fact, I don't think he actually does that justice. I think he mostly talks about other points of corruption with the New Deal itself, that they would bring in public works programs before elections and then cut them after elections. The public works programs themselves had different rates of pay based on whether it was in the North or in the South. There was a whole, and I'm not sure Priest goes into this, I'd have to recheck the book, but a whole thing about who gets hired and who doesn't. That was, a lot of black people were not able to participate in that. And then the Democrats, following through into even the JFK administration, where they were, JFK was one of the first administrations that cut taxes on the big corporations in a big way and started that whole trend that was followed through. It's usually blamed on Reagan, which is accurate to a point, but it really started with JFK before he was assassinated and through other Democrats promoting those policies, including the Carter administration of doing a huge deregulation drive led by liberals that really strengthened the profit margins of the big corporations and really busted a lot of unions and hurt a lot of working people through the busting of unions, but also through the lack of regulation, including health and safety and so on, that that was a collateral damage or fallout from that. Also, the Democratic Party of dropping atomic bombs and turning Japanese, Jim Crow Democratic Party. I mean, just look at the history of the Democratic Party. Look at Obama, bailing out the big corporations, but not the people after the Great Recession. Look at the Obama regime. The health care. I noticed when they mentioned the health care that was passed under the Obama years, the Affordable Care Act, et cetera, so named. If you look at it carefully, or just look at it in any way, really, you could see that it's really a big corporate welfare handout to the insurance companies. It tied, healthcare even closer, if it possible, it did, tied even closer to the big insurance companies, at the same time keeping it very deregulated. And so it was a mess, and you still had, after it was passed, you still had plenty of people, millions of people uninsured. And you still had people who were insured paying tons of money, and what they were paying didn't cover everything. You'll remember you'll see a lot of things in the U.S. corporate media, even not a lot, but you'll see some evidence of this, especially in the alternative media. You'll see stories of people with health insurance. It's not all about people without health insurance, about people with health insurance, but people who did not whose insurance coverage had loopholes, had things that didn't cover that they didn't know about, or even if they did know about it, that's the most they could afford, and all of a sudden they're going into bankruptcy because of being charged tens of thousands of dollars for something that should be free, etc. So that was a bit of a preface there. I could go on about the Democratic Party, and we will, but I just wanted to talk more about there's just a preface to talking more about the elections. Let me give a little bit of more context for the elections. If people are wondering from other countries, or people here wondering why some of the things that Sanders puts forward, for example, are registering as popular in the Democratic Party primaries. A lot of people on the so-called left in the United States would say that Sanders is promoting socialism or democratic socialism, and look at this program that he's putting forward, or elements of his program that he's putting forward, as proof of that. There are definitely elements of Sanders' program that are progressive and really worthwhile. They are, however, things that mostly have been achieved in other capitalist countries. They're not really socialist demands, but they're good demands. They're demands that socialists should support as a part of a fight for a more of a fundamental change in society and get more of what people need. But having like public schools be free or, you know, close to that, depending on what you hear from Sanders, having Medicare for all, which there's problems with Medicare, and there's certainly problems with the way Sanders wants to tax working people who are already taxed. We're already taxed to death, by the way, Bernie. To have us pay for that rather than increasing taxes on the super rich, the big corporations, and cutting military spending, all of which Sanders also says he stands for. He just doesn't match it to the paying for the health care. He says, well, you have to tax working people. Well, he actually doesn't say that much, but when pressed, that's where the money's supposed to come from, for Medicare for all. It should not come from us. It should come from where the wealth really is, at the top of U.S. society, and in the waste that the capitalist-dominated government is always putting into the huge war spending. And if later there had to be tax increases on working people, if you somehow wanted to sell that later down the road, I think you'd have to look at, again, the bigger picture. And I can't really foresee a situation where you'd have to do that, because what you would do later down the road is if there wasn't enough money, you could nationalize, take over under public ownership key corporations that generate a lot of money. In fact, really what a real socialist would put forward, Sanders doesn't put this forward, is in order to pay for what people really need, you nationalize the top 500 corporations under public ownership as a way to pay for all these things that you would initially need, even under capitalism, to have a better life for working people. And that's where the money would come from. That's where the money really is. And would that be something the Democratic Party would like? No, 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 no. And there you get into the dilemma, not only ideologically, not only in terms of demands, but in terms of organizationally, which I'm going to get into more, with trying to claim your democratic socialist. And I don't blame Sanders, by the way. Sanders, if you really know Sanders, if you really know what he said, I'm not claiming to be a personal friend or anything. Sanders, by the way, I'm going to say no Sanders. I mean, know what he says, have followed his career. I've done that for a long time, since his days in Vermont. I have met him and spoken to him, but, you know, I'm not claiming any special knowledge, but I am claiming sort of a little bit of knowledge that maybe not everybody has, and that's understandable. No big deal. Not everybody has been active in politics for a long time. But what you see happening with Sanders, if you follow his political career, is that at a certain point, he really wanted to distance himself from his earlier years of when I think he really was a democratic socialist back in the 70s and maybe even in the 60s. And at a certain point in the 80s, he really started to distance himself from that and said he didn't like the label and so on. You know, he had earlier been talking more about Eugene Debs. He kind of moved away from that, especially in the 90s. In the 90s, there was a big movement for a labor party in the United States. Sanders stayed clear of that completely. Now, please listen to that carefully if you want to understand where Sanders is coming from, because Sanders stayed away from, he ignored the closest that the United States has come in recent years to a real social democratic political party. And that would be the attempt to get a labor party off the ground by sections of the labor movement, by some unions, big unions, in the 1990s. And I was very much involved with that personally, and so was the political group I was in, the social group I was in at the time. And so were a bunch of unions, because NAFTA had been passed and that in the 90s, and that had really been the straw that broke the camel's back for years of attacks on unions. They didn't just start, again, under Reagan. They started really under Carter. Unions have always been under attack in one level or another. And by the 90s, it was clear the unions were losing membership. And NAFTA was further deregulation that hurt unions directly in terms of what they were going to be allowed to protest against or go on strike against. It put a court type system over the needs of what unions wanted in Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and it put it deregulated things to the point where it was obvious that manufacturing jobs were going to flow really rapidly to Mexico and even Canada to a certain extent. From the big corporations, the multinational corporations, they were just itching for that kind of deregulation to move jobs, and they did. And there was a whole Maquiladora section of Mexico that that was expanded with you know, everything from textile to auto parts to auto plants in general, and so on. And NAFTA was a disaster, and some labor leaders led by, in the 1990s in the U.S., led by Tony Mazzocchi, who was one of the main leaders of the, at that time, the Oil, Chemical, Atomic Workers Union, which has since been taken over by other unions, or not taken over, is kind of the wrong words, been, you know, incorporated, and that's also not the best word, but it's been put into, it's merged with other unions over time since the late 90s or early 2000s, I think it was. So OCAW, Mazzocchi had, Tony Mazzocchi had a long period of left activism. He was president of his union. He was on the board of the AFL-CIO. He had helped, for example, Karen Silkwood, the famous, if you don't know who Karen Silkwood was, you should look that up, S-I-L-K-W-O-D. Meryl Streep played her in a movie one time. She was a whistleblower in the atomic power industry, and was murdered for that, many think. Some would say it was an accident, but one of those accidents where it looked like murder more than an accident. And Mazzocchi defended her and so on. Then, and within the labor movement, if you're in the, well, ever, all, at any time in the labor movement in the United States, however weak it is now, or however, you know, however it had dipped at certain times in membership and so on, there's always some people talking about how we need our own political party. We need a labor party. This would be open to all workers, not just union workers. And a labor party or a workers' party of some sort would, you know, based on the, even now, the money of the unions and the number, the membership of unions, that could be a base, one base for a workers' party of some sort, a labor party of some sort, that would give it independent funding, independent foot soldiers, and independent ideology, hopefully. That's where it gets a little tricky, because a lot of labor leaders buy into capitalism, just like leaders of other institutions and political parties under capitalism. But it would be a base for starting a new political party, material basis for starting a political party. And plus, you know, getting donations from working people and all sorts of other things. But that would be a big leap forward, a big step forward for working people to have, like in other countries, a political party. I can't think of an industrialized country that hasn't had this happen at some point historically, even in recent history, of the labor movement starting its own political party. Hasn't happened in the U.S. What happens in the U.S. It started in different areas in the U.S. And I'm going to the example of where it started again in the 90s. But really what you have in the U.S., unfortunately, and Sanders is a part of this phenomena, is by analogy, you have labor leaders. Sanders was not a labor leader, never has been, but you have labor leaders that claim to be progressive, that they say, well, I'm going to run as a labor candidate. But what they really mean is they're going to run as a Democrat. So they run into a Democratic Party primary, and that's the last you hear of them. Next, they pop up as, you know, mainstream Democrat or progressive Democrat, doesn't really matter, doing the capitalist thing for imperialism. Putting forward pro-imperialist stuff, putting forward pro-business stuff, pro-corporate stuff. It's a real dead end. But by analogy, Sanders is doing the same thing, which we'll get into more. But in the 90s, again, just getting back to Sanders, there was a real attempt by Mazzocchi, the Oil, Chemical, Atomic Workers Union, and other unions to get a labor party off the ground. I won't go into the whole history for time purposes, but it was, it started off with a group called Labor Party Advocates. It was polling union locals. Union locals were polling the ones they polled. The majority, I can't think of an exception to this, majority of people supported a Labor Party. And in terms of an idea, yes, we need a Labor Party. We need our own political party. Not all unions did that, of course. It was only the ones really the leaders wanted that would put that forward as an option. You know, other unions, like my union, asked me, they'll just pretend that's impossible. Only the Democrats, that's all there is, just Democrats, Republicans, that's it. And so Mazzocchi was impressed by these returns and these polls and so on. At the same time, there were large meetings happened, even before NAFTA passed, but certainly after, of people within the Bay Area, you know, socialists, the group I used to be in, that helped organize the meetings, and also others in New York and so on. And these meetings were very well attended at the time. This is in the 90s when there's not a lot going on, really. You have Clinton in power, but it's, you know, of course, the Democratic Party I'm describing, one of austerity, one of cuts against social benefits. Remember Clinton getting rid of welfare as we know it. He certainly did. His regime certainly did. Talking about bringing in some sort of health care and then burying that under Clinton administration and all the rest of it. History of the Clinton administration is one of neoliberalism, as they like to say, which basically just means new liberalism, meaning going back to some of the basics of capitalism, as opposed to, say, Keynesianism, which is also capitalist-based, but talks about more taxes on working people, but also more taxes on corporations, and having more social programs and benefits to put more money circulating the economy through workers having certain things subsidized. And that Keynesianism became more and more seen as unnecessary by big business, by the big corporations, including those that run the Democratic Party and that control the Democratic Party. And so they started turning against that, you know, in the Carter administration and then beyond that. And Clinton was a very pure product of that anti-Keynesian sort of Democrat who wanted to go back to basic, austerity measures, balance the budget and all that kind of stuff, to really be anti-union in a lot of ways. And the labor leaders, some of them picked up on that, obviously. It was pretty obvious it was happening, continuing to lose membership, NLRB ruling against them, all sorts of things happening where they, some leaders like Tony Mazzocchi, leaders of the United Steelworkers Union, leaders of other unions got together, United Electrical Workers and other unions got together and started to build the foundations for a labor party. It had a convention in 1996, another one in 1998. And these conventions were well attended by union representatives of a wing of the AFL-CIO. But the problem was, my main point here is that Sanders never appeared at these conventions. I was at the conventions. He never showed up. Sanders never expressed interest in the Labor Party in the 90s that I'm aware of. Maybe rhetorically he might have said, that's interesting or something, but I never even saw that. It was just he was, and the reason was because Sanders was already on his trajectory of working with the Democratic Party. That really started in 1984. He endorses Mondale. But he's looking closely at the Jackson campaign in 1988, likes what he sees of Jackson trying to use the Democratic Party for what? I don't know. That's the discussion, really. I don't agree. Makes no sense, really, for anyone that considers themselves a socialist to try to work with the Democratic Party or reform the Democratic Party, because the opposite effect is always at work, that the socialists get sucked in. Historically, in the United States, socialists get sucked into the Democratic Party. Big movements get sucked into the Democratic Party. The Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota sucked into the Democratic Party as an example. We'll give an example later in the show of Upton Sinclair running as a Democrat in California after being known as a socialist for many years. A lot of analogies to Sanders and getting totally screwed over by the Democratic Party and disappearing after that. Henry Wallace running, as an independent, going back into the Democratic Party afterwards. There's just so many examples and when Wallace ran, or the examples of, say, McGovern in 72, and that's another good analogy to Sanders. McGovern runs, actually wins the nomination based on something that Sanders doesn't have, a mass movement. And this, at this point, it was mass movements against the Vietnam War and other mass movements. The women's movement was reinvigorated in the 60s. The environmental movement and other movements. So you had a real political, base of to the left of the Democratic Party to rely on. But McGovern wasn't interested in forming a workers' party or a third party, like Sanders is not either. So McGovern runs the Democratic Party, uses the anti-war movement, which he wasn't really a part of, but he used the energy from it and activists from it and from the New Left to promote some activists from the New Left too, but a lot, but to promote, the reason I make that distinction is not every New Left group supported McGovern at that time. Many of them went on and did support Jackson in 1988, but for McGovern back in 72, much of the New Left in the United States was very ultra-left and just ignored electoral politics completely, which is a mistake for socialists, for Marxists. And then McGovern wins, right? He wins the nomination, and he's running against Nixon, who's just as crazy as Trump, by the way, and just as bad as Trump, in fact, worse than Trump in many ways. But what was existing then that does not exist now is this mass movement putting pressure on Nixon and on the Nixon administration. And unfortunately what happened, but it was predictable based on the history of the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party elites turned on McGovern even though he was their candidate. He won the nomination. They turned on him. They sabotaged his campaign any way they could, including some of them publicly coming out saying, we're going to vote for Nixon. Now, can you imagine big Democrats saying they're going to vote for Trump? Imagine it. Imagine that if Sanders wins the nomination, there's a good chance, and that's if he doesn't make some backroom deal to drop certain things, but if he puts forward some of the things he's putting forward programmatically now, and he seems to mean it in the future, in the near future, and the DNC feels they can't work with him, like they already have. I mean, that's the thing, one thing about Sanders people don't realize. They have worked with Sanders, and Sanders has done a lot of work for the Democratic Party in terms of fundraising, getting people to register as Democrat, getting bringing people into the Democratic Party, basically. Again, can't go in as a member, but you can go in as a voter or a starry-eyed idealist in terms of reforming the Democratic Party. Or making it more progressive or something, and that's what Sanders is doing. So he's strengthening the Democratic Party a lot, even as he's causing ferment in the Democratic Party based on a big majority of the Democratic Party elites and politicians not wanting some of the things he's putting forward, like Medicare for All or the free public tuition, so on. As you know, some will rhetorically support that, most won't. And that has caused a lot of ferment. And I would say, yeah, it's most likely scenario that although Sanders has done a good job for the Democratic Party from the standpoint of the DNC, in many ways they don't want him to be their preferred candidate. I think when they say who can get elected against Trump, that reflects the DNC's calculations and other Democratic Party elites' calculations about who really can win against Trump from their whole ideology. I don't buy into that personally because I don't buy into Democratic Party politics at all. But if I say I got, time, I don't know, something would have to happen that would transform me magically into a Democratic Party operative of some sort, I would argue probably that Sanders could win. I wouldn't have any illusions, hopefully, in Sanders being a Democratic Socialist, because he's not. And I would argue that he could win against Trump, because we're talking about right populism versus left populism, or right populism versus progressive populism. And right now in the United States, progressive populism, even among independents, even among Republicans, some aspects of Republicans, is going to be popular because people are hurting. And I'm going to talk about that in this pretty good article that came out of the Atlantic magazine, or the Atlantic, called The Great Affordability Crisis Breaking America. So here we have this touted economic boom, but as is even said in the corporate media, a lot of working people are not feeling it. And then certain things, inflation, despite what you hear about inflation being low overall, in certain key aspects of American life, things that you need, if you're a family, if you're even just an individual, those things are out of control in terms of price, in terms of inflation. And those are higher education, even at public schools, very, very expensive now. Already there's statistics showing the number of people going to college is dropping in the United States. The healthcare that we mentioned earlier, everyone knows you can get really screwed on healthcare. All of a sudden they're going to charge you thousands of dollars for an ambulance ride now. Or even if you have insurance, that all of a sudden they can the price of insulin can triple or quadruple or go up to, I don't even, do the math, just exponentially explode. And then your life, your safety is to say people have died in this country recently from trying to ration insulin, from not being able to afford insulin. You think that's not resonating among workers? It is. People talk about it. They talk about it all the time. And many people talk about it in the United States without any kind of political context, really, deep political understanding, because there's no workers' party in the United States. There's no big socialist movement in the United States to give people. And that Sanders' campaign is not a movement. It's a Democratic Party electoral campaign. If you want to call it a movement, you're wrong. It's just a Democratic Party electoral campaign with a lot of support, relatively speaking, within the Democratic Party. Could there be movements coming out of the Sanders campaign? That's something we'll talk about in a few minutes. But right now, I'm just getting into, right now there's the pain and the suffering, despite the so-called boom in the economy, is very, very real out there. and it's just ripe for someone to ride that wave. I'm not saying it's cynical necessarily. It could be quite genuine. Sanders could be quite genuine in his anger, class anger, so to speak, and say, yeah, we need, you know, that these things that are completely unaffordable now are very, very hard to afford. Higher education, health care, child care. Warren has been talking about that lately. What would be another example? There's other examples as well. Aspects of transportation, depending on where you live, are becoming extremely expensive. Owning and buying a car, maintaining a car, becoming very, very expensive. Public transport, garbage in the United States for the most part, and very, very expensive. That's why, no accident, we talked about it on the last show, there are movements here and there, including one that the Independent Socialist Group and myself are involved with, to try to get free bus fares in Worcester. Free transit, fancy way of saying free buses. You don't pay anything to ride the buses. We also expand the bus service and start building light rail in Worcester. And that would be free as well. My understanding is that in Kansas City, Missouri right now, they've got free bus system, free light rail. My understanding is that in Portland, Oregon, they're going to go to free bus service, free light rail if they haven't already. There's a city in France, Dunkirk, France. Free public transportation. I believe it's mostly buses. I'm not sure if there's light rail. Luxembourg, light rail and buses free. That huge metropolis, that huge country in Europe. Anyway, there's other examples. There's also examples of hybrid systems where you have some of it free, some of it not free. Even in here in Massachusetts, they did an experiment recently of only charging $10 on a weekend for the commuter rail. All of a sudden, ridership shot up on the commuter rail over the weekend. No duh, of course, you know. But it should be free. Public transit, it should be free. Right now, things like public transit are horribly inflated in the United States. Owning and maintaining a car, repairs and so on, horribly inflated in the United States. Getting into college, higher, whether it's public or especially private, horribly, horribly inflated, really, really difficult. You're going to go into debt, your kid's going to go into debt, or you're both going to go into debt. More debt, by the way, because credit card debt is huge because of other things people can't afford. Anyway, great affordability crisis, breaking America. I'm going to get into in a second. But going back to, you know, running within the Democratic Party, this is a party where a lot of people that control that party, most of them are making profits off of everything I just mentioned. All right? They are capitalists. Nancy Pelosi said, we're capitalists after all. They certainly are capitalists. Through their actual ownership of things or their investments, they believe strongly in the capitalist system. So let's say Sanders, who, you know, he owns a few houses. He's a millionaire from his salaries in Congress since the 90s. Let's say he still feels his background, his class background, working class background, and it's genuine, a lot of these demands that he puts forward. That's great. That's great. But you can't do it as an individual. You can't do it in a political party owned by big business, a corporate political party. You got to do it with the hard slog of organizing. Sanders talks about mass movements. He goes, I'm going to be organizer-in-chief, he said one time. I'm going to be organizer-in-chief if I get elected. Okay, chief, here's the problem. You're also going to be trying for bipartisanship, meaning partnership with the Republican Party and the more conservative Democrats, and party unity, partnering with the more conservative Democrats, who are going to be at war with you, by the way, a lot of them. And that's going to be, it's going to be really hard to pass anything. In fact, I'd say impossible to pass anything of substance, even if you're commander-in-chief. And then there's problems that, that's what they call the presidency here in the U.S., commander-in-chief. And I'm using that term purposely because there's real problems if you look at Sanders. There's a part where the whole Democratic Socialist facade falls apart, and that is when you talk about war spending, you talk about the aims of U.S. imperialism, when you talk about U.S. foreign policy, to put it in a more benign term. Sanders is right in line with a lot of that stuff. Some of it he doesn't agree with. Sometimes he votes against that stuff. Sometimes he votes for it. He votes for going to war. Sometimes he votes for war, for funding war. Sometimes he votes. Sometimes he'll say Chavez, dead communist dictator, hate him. Maduro, communist dictator, hate him. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but that you look up the quotes. They're not, it's not that far away. McCain, oh, good friend of mine, really honorable person. Blah blah blah. McCain was a war criminal. He was a war criminal. McCain was a rich capitalist, Republican Party. You know what I mean? So on the whole issue of the rest of the world, Sanders is very suspect. And I know you don't want to hear that, some of the listeners, but check it out. Don't take my word for it. Check it out. And it's a shame. Right now, he's supporting the F-35 fighter up in Vermont. People don't want it nearby the bases. People don't want that. Sanders just says, well, it might bring in some jobs. So, you know, he says it will bring in jobs. I don't know if that's really true or not, but that's what he says. He supports the F-35 in Vermont. If you look closely at his political career, there's been other times where he's made those kind of deals with big corporations. But he was in favor of the bombing of Yugoslavia, stuff like that. So, but you know, a lot of people want to ignore that for some reason. They look at it as economic populism, and that's enough for them. Forget about all that foreign stuff. That doesn't really matter. But it does matter for a Marxist, especially any Marxist knows that the wealth of the United States comes from exploiting workers here, but also exploiting workers in other countries. Comes from exploiting nature and the environment here in the United States, polluting. It also comes from doing that to other countries. And if you're a Marxist, if you're a socialist, you're an internationalist. And the lives and livelihoods of people in other countries are just as important as the lives and livelihoods of Americans. And that's the way it is if you're a socialist, a real socialist. And I don't get that. You don't see that with Sanders. Early on in the 70s, you know, he believed in that, it seems, from what I can tell. But he dropped that at a certain point. And that is dangerous. Now, does that mean I'm saying Sanders is going to rush the United States into war if he got elected? He's not the only one that would make that decision, by the way. But probably not. Probably not. He probably wouldn't. It would just be very unpopular. Same reason Trump doesn't rush the country into a new war every other day, like he would like to, probably, because the people won't go for it, you know? And that gets into the thing about Sanders being a catalyst for movements, for mass movements of some sort. And he's talked about doing that. He said, rhetorically, look, it's really mass movements that will achieve these things, or movements that will achieve these things that he puts forward. And that is correct. That is technically very, very correct. However, actions matter more than rhetoric. Sanders has no record, just like any other Democratic Party politician, he has no record of actually initiating, sustaining mass movements. Because, it's very simple, because for them, what's most important is channeling any energy from those movements that might exist separate from them back into the Democratic Party to get Democrats elected, to get legislation passed in certain formulations of X number of Democrats or whatever in power. That's the goal. That's what they put all their time into. That's what Sanders put all his time into. Sanders ran in 2016, did okay by the standards of, you know, Democratic Party, corporate politics and all that. Like Obama did, by the way, before him, he forms his own organization. Sanders's is called Our Revolution. And the problem is Our Revolution doesn't have a membership, really, in terms of organized membership that can, have a Congress or, you know, vote on things and all that, any sort of internal democracy. It's really just a lobbying group at best, or a front group for the electoral campaign, although Sanders claims to not directly control Our Revolution. So, and Obama did the same thing. He did a thing called Organizing for Action. Interestingly enough, recently there was an article in Politico from... actually, the article was from last August, 2019, but it gets into what's going on now, where the DNC, the people that run the Democratic Party, they didn't like what Obama did after his first presidential run, creating Organizing for Action, because it was sucking away money and sort of creating a parallel infrastructure that competed for donors, basically. I'm quoting a little bit there from the Politico article. And this is, again, from Politico, 8/27/2019, and it's called Democrats Disavow Obama's Creation of a Rival Political Group, but it's really about Sanders. The article shifts gears and starts talking about Sanders, and all the Democratic Party candidates, including Sanders, signed a pledge that they wouldn't do what Obama did, basically. Let's see. It's where do they mention this pledge? let's see. Da, 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 da. You cannot create another OFA, which was Downs Group. DNC is an important national infrastructure. The states have a thing with the Democratic Party, the Association of State Democratic Committees. And so there's a pledge signed by Biden, Warren, Sanders, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and 16 other contenders at the time that requires candidates to use their state parties as their organizing, messaging, and political arm should they become the party's nominee. So if Sanders wins the nomination, he's supposed to live up to this agreement he signed. Many state parties are run by full-time and unpaid chairs who are expected to recruit, train, and get candidates elected, etc. The agreement also mandates that the eventual nominee to share all the data he or she collects during the campaign with the DNC and state parties, which is already a requirement, by the way, just to get access to a party's voters' file, so that's already happened. And they also want money for the state committees. Warren had already signaled that she wanted to operate within the existing party infrastructure, donated $5,000 to each of the 50 state parties last year. Now, Our Revolution, Sanders' organization, was a point of contention. Sanders has long identified himself as an independent, except when he runs for president. And also, he caucuses with Democrats in the Senate. He works closely with Democrats in the Senate. That last part, I'm adding that. And we have this guy. This is really an interesting quote. Quote, "We can't have competing centers of gravity as we move forward," said Ken Martin, chair of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Now, listen to that. Democratic Farmer Labor Party. That shows the history of a actual labor party formation, a sort of workers' party formation, sucked into the Democratic Party back in the 30s. And now saying, quote, and this is the end of the quote, "We've learned the lessons of the past." Yeah, you learned them the wrong way. You took an independent thing that really represented working people and you sucked it into a corporate thing, the Democratic Party. Now, Sanders claims that, oh, it's not a problem because Our Revolution operates independently, but then the rest of the article is how they're going to change that. They're going to challenge that, et cetera. If Senator Sanders becomes the nominee and the president, I do think that Our Revolution would have to shutter or really focus only on local candidates, Klebe said. But Our Revolution would really have to shift its message. Though Sanders is not involved in Our Revolution's operations, a legal line the organization follows. The current goal of Our Revolution is to reform the Democratic Party by getting people elected to the DNC and state parties. The portion of the organization dedicated to that would have to end, this Democratic Party official says. And that's just one example of many of what Sanders would face if he won the nominee. But I was getting back originally to Sanders' trajectory that he ignored the Labor Party, a real attempt to get the Labor Party going in the 90s in the U.S. that failed ultimately because some of the labor leaders behind it, almost all of them except for Mizaki, they had structured the party such that the real power was in the delegates from the labor unions, which, you know, makes a little sense, but you have to have it wider than that. And they didn't really have it wider than that in any real sense. So if you weren't a delegate from a labor union, which would be controlled really, you know, for all intents and purposes by the president of the union, who would become a delegate, unfortunately, then you didn't have like all the voices in the Labor Party equally represented or even close to that. So when those union presidents got scared, not Mizaki, not maybe one or two others, but when most of them got scared that had supported the Labor Party, and there was like, I don't know how many, a dozen or so, they then went back to the Democratic Party, even before the Labor Party had officially run candidates. I think they ended up running candidates in the early 2000s, but it was really a symbolic effort. By that time, the party was gone. Mizaki had passed away suddenly, and the whole Labor Party thing was already gone by the 2000 election, where the AFL-CIO leadership, including some of the people that, some of the presidents that supported the Labor Party, they never got their other foot out of the Democratic Party. So one foot in the Labor Party, one foot in the Democratic Party. They jumped back in the Democratic Party with both feet in the run-up to the 2000 election, and they said, look, anybody, including you, Tony Mizaki, that supports Nader, who was running as an independent Green, who was getting a lot of support as independent, having big rallies like the one Sanders is having lately. They said, if you support Nader, we're going to just, you know, cut all funding to the Labor Party effort and we're going to really go after you. Mizaki was caved into a certain extent to that, but then he said, how about if I just individually support him? They're like, you know, not claim the Labor Party supports him, just myself. No, you can't even do that, blah, blah. and it led to a big fight. Well, not necessarily a big fight, but it just basically led to Mizaki retreating. I don't know if he ever like said anything about Nader, positive about Nader or not. He probably did, but probably made it very clear it was just himself, and probably they, you know, were pissed at him about that. But he never brought in his union or the Labor Party into the game. And Nader actually tried to get the Labor Party endorsement earlier. He tried to get them to think about endorsing him earlier than that, even back in 98. And they wouldn't do it. And that was that. To that window of opportunity for the Labor Party was closed shut by the labor leaders supporting Gore in 2000. And what a joke that was, obviously. And we're back to business as usual, where most of the labor movement is tied in the Democratic Party. Now, with Sanders being a sort of progressive populist face of the Democratic Party, most unions are going along with that. Some are not, for bad reasons, actually. Not because there is a positive reason for a union leader to not support Sanders and the Democratic Party at this point would be to say, we're gonna support our own political party. We're going to work to get that off the ground immediately. And that would be great. That would be very positive. None of them that I'm aware of are doing that, that are not supporting Sanders and the Democrats. They're instead saying they're supporting other Democrats. So they're still supporting the Democrats. They're not supporting Sanders. And they're just saying that, oh, yeah, we have our own, like this culinary union thing in Nevada. We have our own health care, and we don't want Medicare for All to mess that up. That's crap. That's bull. Any national health service that is decently funded would be much, much better than whatever these unions can cobble, the unioners can cobble together with big corporations for a temporary moment in time. You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous. And it would actually, you could even try, just an attempt to get, a serious attempt to get National Health Service of some sort, Medicare for All, socialized medicine, et cetera, could help your negotiations further down if it doesn't succeed fully in its initial attempt. So it's a really wrong thing for the labor leaders to be against Medicare for All, which isn't the greatest name, I agree, because Medicare, they're not saying this, but I would say Medicare for All is not the greatest name because there are problems with Medicare. And so sometimes people put expanded Medicare for All. That helps. Why not say healthcare, free healthcare for everyone? Why not say, you know, something to that effect, make it really understandable? Everyone's going to get healthcare. It's going to be free. That's the way to go and make everyone understand it. And it would get away from this divide and conquer thing over, like, some union leaderships are doing where we have our negotiated healthcare and it's good for some of our members, so we're not going to risk, which isn't really a risk. It's actually a positive to try for something better on a national level, so universal health care of some sort. So Sanders wasn't interested in the Labor Party movement in the 90s, which was a serious movement for a time. It got sucked back into the Democratic Party, that energy, as Sanders is now doing with political energy for some of the demands that he's putting forward and so on. And those demands are, that's the positive thing about the Sanders candidacy. And there are positives, they're just outweighed by the negatives. The positives are putting forward progressive political demands. And then, you know, people hear about that. They're like, yeah, that's a good thing. Like Medicare for All, for example, although he could be doing that better, much better. Why stop at public, universities being free for everyone? I would say the private universities have to be free for everyone too. You know, that would be a good demand. But anyway, I'm not going to like go through each of the demands that Sanders is putting forward and show their weaknesses. There are weaknesses to them, but some of them would be a step forward, obviously, right? Now, a step forward realizable under capitalism with mass movements. And again, Sanders has no record of doing mass movements. And the Democratic Party politicians, including Sanders, they don't do that. They just to keep their electoral machine going is a full-time job. And they're pushing everything into the Democratic Party and electoral politics. Even Sanders, I got a thing from donate to Sanders. I never donate to Democrats ever, or Republicans ever. So it was like donate to Sanders campaign. Get that every day. I get one, and in one way or another, I got one last week that was like And anything you donate today or this week or whatever will go to these other candidates that Bernie is supporting. And that's just something I've you know, tried to make clear to people, and other people in the Independent Socialist Group and others have tried to make clear, is that, you know, you don't just get Sanders when you support Sanders. You get the Democratic Party. Sorry, you can't magically divorce Sanders from the Democratic Party. He is and has been, and ever since he was in Congress, he endorses other Democrats. He raises money for other Democrats. He promotes other Democrats, and they're not always, not that it matters, because this is just a rhetorical thing. It shouldn't, doesn't really matter, but it doesn't matter if they call themselves progressive or not. Sanders will support, you know, Democratic Party politicians that are not really progressive in any real sense, or some that are progressive, but again, they're going through the Democratic Party, so that obviates, that cancels out any progressiveness that they're doing, including Sanders putting these things forward, because Sanders didn't initiate these demands. You have to understand, Sanders came late to a $15 an hour minimum wage, and it was already being brought up, for example, by Shama Sawant in Seattle, running as a socialist for Seattle City Council and national campaigns for 15 now, and so on. In fact, Sanders came late to that. You know, it's good that he's promoting it now. I don't hear it that much in what I hear, but it's there. It's out there sometimes. The Medicare for All, really touching a nerve. People really want better health insurance, free health insurance, really free health care. Forget insurance. That's a stupid word for that. And people want, people can't afford higher education. And we're taught nowadays, and even back to when I was a kid, that's the way out. That's the way forward. That's just survivability now depends on a college degree of some sort. Not exactly true, but true enough in terms of, in the context of weak unions, weaker unions and so on, no workers' party of any sort. You're not going to, the non-college degree holders, there's plenty of evidence, unfortunately, that they make less money than those with college degree holders in general. Although, I wonder if some of that's shifting. I mean, I think there's people in the house repair racket that are making big money, plumbers and such, here and there. Depends on which part of the country you're in, but making big money. And you're not going to make that now with a lot of college degrees that the corporations feel are unsuitable or not necessary for their what they want people for. And that's always been the case. They've always channeled workers really into certain college degrees because those were lucrative, but that could also change which ones they like, you know, which ones they find useful, the big corporations. And therefore you go through, you sacrifice all that for college, and which I think education is a good thing in and of itself, but it has to be universal, it has to be open to everybody to be a really good thing. But it's a good thing, you know, to learn more, even if there's a lot of bias, pro-capitalist bias, obviously, in colleges and so on. It's a good thing to get an education, as it should be lifelong, really, learning. And it should be free. How can you own, like, knowledge and stuff? It doesn't make any sense. But it is owned, believe me, here in the U.S., very, very owned and very, very commodified and very, very used to make a profit, make profits for people. And that's becoming intolerable for a lot of people that are told their only way out, or something they're interested in, the only way forward to get to be part of what you want to do, is to get a degree. And it's so hard to get one now, financially speaking, for so many people, that again, you know, to put forward that demand really resonates with a lot of people, the demand of even just free public colleges. And there's a lot of competition for public colleges in certain places and certain public colleges within certain states. A lot of competition, and those prices are going way up as well, as we said earlier. So anyway, the main theme here is that trajectory of Sanders has been away from independent politics since the 70s, and working with the Democrats since, you know, mid-80s, but really he made a deal with the Democrats in 92, very clear deal at the Kennedy School at Harvard. He said to the Democrats, look, or they said to him, we won't run anyone against you in Vermont as long as you promote our candidate, our national candidate within Vermont. And that's what Sanders has done. They both stuck to that agreement, and Sanders also fulfilled his end of things by raising money for the Democrats, the Democratic Party, and then in turn getting committee assignments and so on. So the whole independent thing is a charade, by Sanders, but it's one that has a material reality that in Vermont, that was a popular thing to be. It was popular to be an independent. It is still a popular thing to have next to your name, independent, in a lot of places in the United States. But instead of turning that into independence for some sort of workers'